Oh man, what a show for you here today. A huge show for you as we give you a week 7 preview for the books. Andy Behrens joins the show to give you 3 burning fantasy questions he wants answered and 3 matchups he says deserve your attention. What will these traded wide receivers look like in their first weeks with their new teams? The Chiefs coming off the bye, what can we expect in that wide receiver room? Later, Tara Roberts joins the show to give her make or break players for week 7. Can you trust Tank Bigsby? Is it time to invest in some Patriots pass catchers? All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. It's Friday, October 18th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
I know that you always say it's a hell of a day to talk ball, but it's really a hell of a day to talk ball. This is a great week. We have incredible games on the schedule. We have too many great games to actually like adequately discuss in the preview podcast. It's an incredible slate. This is like legit phenomenal. And it doesn't even involve the Bears. The Bears aren't even in this one. But it's so good. This might be my favorite week so far of the NFL season.
Andy, I appreciate the hell out of you because I think you are actually the only person when I say it's a hell of a day to talk ball, which I have to say something other than just like welcome to the show because that's what everybody says. And, you know, when I was younger and even more bristlier, if that's a word, bristlier than I am now, I was very particular about it. And I want to welcome people to a podcast, you know. Now it's like, okay, just assimilate and get in the factory line with everybody else, who cares?
Yeah.
But I was like, I gotta say something here at the top of the show. I gotta have like a tagline, and you know, it's a hell of a day to talk ball, why not? You are the only person, Andy, that when I say that you're like, yeah, it is a hell of a day to talk. You always get my juices flowing, which I really appreciate, because it's great for the preview show. And this is a hell of a week, definitely, to talk ball because it's a great slate of games.
Yeah, there's never anything wrong with talking ball, but some days, like, it's really a hell of a day, and we happen to be in that right now.
We happen to be right square in the middle of a great week to talk ball and talk about some fantasy questions, talk about a lot of things here, and this is how we do things on the weekly preview show. Andy joins the first half of the program to provide 3 burning fantasy questions he wants answered. We're also going to take 1 burning question from you, the listener, because I promised if you guys send in good, emphasis good, mailbag questions, we will do 1 burning question from you all as well. So we do 3 from Andy, 1 from the listener, and then Andy has 3 matchups he says deserve your attention. And I bet it was hard to pick this week because there were so many good games. Then in the back half of the show, Tara Roberts joins me to identify the make or break players that could determine the outcome of your fantasy matchups this weekend. And we wrap up the show with our keys to winning each week. So, Andy, let's get into those 3 burning fantasy questions you have, starting with a topic that was pretty much one of the biggest pressing questions of the week.
Yeah, we got trades, and they are big trades. So first burning question, we're just going to roll them both into the same thing. How quickly can Devontae Adams and Amari Cooper get up to speed with the new teams, and what are we doing with them this week, right? Devontae Adams is pretty easy. He is apparently actually living with Aaron Rodgers, at least short term. They were immediately going over like terminology, signals. Obviously, concepts from the Green Bay days are going to carry over. I don't think anyone expects a steep learning curve there. It's a trade that could actually make life a lot easier for Garrett Wilson, even if he is probably not going to see another 23 target game. Like, it, you know, it reshapes the field for him a little bit. I like everything about the trade. I'm not sure that it's exactly what the Jets needed, but they needed something. And this seems to, I mean, it seems to make Aaron Rodgers happy, which is good because I have never seen any professional athlete look as sad as Aaron Rodgers looks every single week. So, hey, maybe they get a perkier version of him. I've got Adams ranked pretty close to like where he would just be in a normal week. I mean, he could see volume right away. Like this could be good right away, even in a difficult matchup. So I'm not so worried about him. Cooper, it's weird to say that like I got really excited for like an Amari Cooper trade, but I got pretty excited for it. 'Cause it's it's just almost exactly what the Bills needed. If they couldn't get Davante Adams, they still get a player who can, you know, win downfield. He can win outside. Keon Coleman, not quite ready to be that guy yet, not like 5 or 6 times a game, which is fine. He's a rookie, a developmental rookie. Cooper had been obviously a bit of a fantasy bust to this point in the season, but he's barely seeing any catchable targets in Cleveland, right? That was about team context, quarterback quality. And the other kind of fun thing, as producer Colin knows, Amari Cooper's been traded in season before. So we kind of know what it looks like when he, you know, changes environments in like the middle of October. And it went really well in Dallas, you know, forever ago, 6 years ago, right? But he dropped in there, saw volume immediately, scored a touchdown in his first game, and the Cowboys went on a run, and it was good. And I, you know, Cooper's also coming off basically his best season as a pro. 83 receiving yards per game last year, over 17 yards per catch. He was great. He was great with Joe Flacco. Like, and now he gets Josh Allen. Like, I think this can really work. I think this is, I don't know if Devontae is exactly what the Jets needed. Someone like Amari Cooper is exactly what the Bills needed.
Yeah, let's take these two situations kind of bit by bit here. It's funny, actually, neither one of these, you know, immediately walks into like a green light matchup either necessarily.
Yeah,
because Bills are facing Titans. That defense, I maintain, might be the most underrated unit in the entire league. They're definitely on mutiny watch just because of what's going on the offensive side of the football. And I mean, honestly, I don't think you'll ever get mutiny in a Mike Tomlin-led team, but the Jets are facing the Steelers on Sunday night. They also have very similar, like, we don't know what's going on that side of the ball. They barely know what's going on that side of the ball. But defensively, this is a good Pittsburgh Steelers team. So neither one of them necessarily goes into just an immediate green light matchup. But let's stick on the Adams side of this thing first. I'm with you that I think just because of the familiarity with the quarterback and the system and everything, I think Adams walks in and is still just a fantasy starter. Now, I think I haven't talked to you since that these trades went down, even though I feel like I've talked about these trades to everybody in my life basically since then. The two dogs, the wife, friends, family, strangers on the street, people in the grocery store, etc. But still, I haven't talked to you about this. So I kind of am viewing basically now both of these wide receivers, Adams and Wilson, on the Jets, as guys that are definitely both starters. I would say probably, Andy, to me, they're maybe just boom bust wide receiver twos now, which that puts him in a big group of dudes. We know the targets are coming down for Garrett Wilson, but I like that you at least mentioned that we could still see some more efficiency on those targets. I mean, I've talked about this a lot this year. My new kind of like golden rule for NFL offenses is that your wide receiver number one should not have more targets than points scored for your team. And the Jets are actually that Vikings game where Wilson had what 22, 23 targets.
Yeah.
They broke the rule by a lot. I mean, like Malik Nabers and the Giants, that's been on my radar, like Cooper Kupp and the Rams in Week 1. That was on my radar, but those guys were like, all right, Malik had 15 targets, we scored 15 points. He had 18 targets, we scored 18 points. Cooper Kupp had 21 targets, we scored 20 points. Wilson had like 22, 23 targets, and the Jets scored 17 points against the Vikings. Yeah. They were big-time offenders of that no-no rule. So I do think there's a room for both of these guys to kind of be, like I said, at least to me, I don't, you tell me if you kind of view this differently, like those guys you start every single week, but you do have to expect some volatility here.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think the you know, the one thing maybe that could upend that a little bit is if they remain as committed to Alan Lazard as they've been to this point, right? Like I would just like to see so many of the targets that were going to Mike Williams, Alan Lazard, Tyler Conklin, like, you know, let's find a new home for those. And if that new home is Davante Adams, that is an obvious win. That is a screaming win. And I think both Wilson and Adams can survive this just fine. I don't know. Is it an open question as to what Aaron Rodgers is at this point, or is he just a little bit less than the MVP version of Aaron Rodgers? Maybe it's settled, right? Like, I don't know that Aaron Rodgers supports two wide receiver ones each week. So we're not quite there. So I agree there's some volatility to it. But in the best weeks for each player, like I think Wilson and Adams are both going to have wide receiver one weeks. I'm probably not going to have either one of them ranked as top 10 wide receivers like going forward.
Right. Same. That's basically exactly how I feel about it. Yeah. I think when you look at the Jets just passing game targets among the wide receivers specifically, it is, you know, 67 targets to Garrett Wilson. He leads the NFL, 40 targets to Alan Lazard, and then 17 for Mike Williams. I mean, Mike Williams is obviously out the door. Yeah. I think it was reported today, and I can't remember exactly. It might have been, I can't remember exactly who reported it, but it might have been, I think it was Diana Rossini from the Athletic. It was Chargers, ironically, where he just left. Steelers, who play in this game against the Jets, and the Saints, who play, they'll have played by the time you're listening to this podcast. I don't know what the Saints think they're doing. I don't know what they think. Like, okay, we'll get Mike Williams and we'll save our season. I don't know about that, but they don't really have, they just need warm bodies in that receiver room. Pittsburgh actually makes some sense. And the Chargers, just, again, kind of funny that they'll just be buying low on the guy they allowed to walk out the door. So, I think any of those teams make sense, but what doesn't make sense is him staying in New York. He's going to be out of here. So I think even if we take a little bit off of Wilson's plays, we take a little bit off of Alan Lazard's plays, and we just give that to, and Mike Williams' targets to Davante Adams, I think we can kind of make the math work here for these guys to maybe be Adams and Wilson weekly are probably splitting 50% of the targets, and then Lazard is kind of cleaning up the rest. And there's definitely going to be some weeks where Lazard is like the top scoring wide receiver on this team. That's just going to happen.
Yeah, no, I agree. He's not going to go away. Like, Alan Lazard might finish the season with 10 touchdowns. he's most of the way there now. Like, this is a wild year for Lazard. Didn't see it coming. Saw it coming a few years ago, and it didn't happen. And all of a sudden, we're getting the breakout year from Lazard. And I don't know, he might actually keep it up.
5 touchdowns, 6 drops, according to PFF, for Alan Lazard. So, yeah, we'll get 10 touchdowns, and we'll get, I don't know, 13 drops. That'll be a pretty epic season for old Alan Lazard there. So I think we're both on the same page here. We're probably starting Davante Adams. Cooper is a more interesting question. I mean, Sean McDermott, Wednesday, talking about Amari Cooper's status, he basically said he wasn't sure, like, if he's even going to play. And this is different. My guess is he ends up playing. How much he plays, how much timing and chemistry he has. This isn't a system Cooper is familiar with. This is not a quarterback Cooper is familiar with. You're right that that we've seen Cooper get dropped in the middle of the season, and producer Colin said that 2018 Cowboys season, he basically saved that year for the Dallas Cowboys. I'm with you that I think he can get up to speed here pretty quickly. The first week against the Titans defense is a pretty tall task, and especially because this isn't like in Dallas, they dropped him kind of into that move around flanker position. He's probably playing X receiver for this Buffalo Bills offense, which is a bit more of a big learning curve. And it's a rather arduous system too. What they ask of that X receiver spot in Joe Brady's offense. And you know, that's why they had DJ Moore play it all those years ago, 'cause he was their best receiver. I'll tell you this, Andy, we're in a league together with, the high up execs at Yahoo. It's the only league I have, Amari Cooper. And like, sorry for rambling here, but in this league, I'm 4-2, shout out to me. And I drafted CMC number one. I also drafted Nico Collins.
Wow.
And I have Brandon Ayuk. So, like, I don't want to hear excuses about this guy killed my season. Keep working, baby.
That is an all-time no excuses year. Actually, that's really amazing.
Yeah, Jalen Warren, also a draft pick on this team. And like I said, I have Amari Cooper, who's been doing, not a lot. So sometimes you just got to keep working, and sometimes you got to get really, really lucky. So anyways, I have like George Pickens, I have Josh Downs, I have Brandon Ayuk. I don't know if Amari Cooper makes that roster versus a Titans defense over a guy like George Pickens, who also has a tough matchup. Like, I think that's the type of player that people will be debating Cooper with this week.
Yeah, I put Cooper in the mid-30s, at least for a week. Like, I don't think he's a must-start by any means, and that's a little bit matchup and a little bit just, like, learning his way around the new team, right? I think it could take a couple weeks, for sure. I just think that long-term, and if you're the Bills, you know, you really just want Amari Cooper, like, fully up to speed, and you want, like, whatever your playoff offense looks like, you want to basically have that in December. So this isn't really about how do we get through November and October with Amari Cooper. They have some time to get him up to speed. I there are going to be weeks when Buffalo throws the ball like 21 times and nobody really eats. I should also say, I think the nice thing about this trade from a fantasy perspective is it takes the biggest bite out of like Mac Hollins, who no one was playing anyway, right? Like, I think they'll still give some opportunities to Coleman. He's a young player that they like, but they weren't they weren't really leaning on him anyway. I think Cooper's going to operate in a very different way from Khalil Shakir. So I don't think this really bothers him in any meaningful way, Kincaid in any meaningful way. I think it basically, you know, and I, you know, Matt Collins is clearly the sort of player who like real life teams actually like. And he's just been a non-factor in fantasy, and is, seems to me that some of the most impactful plays he's had all year have been balls that he doesn't catch and asks for a penalty flag afterward, right? Like, he's just not like a, he's not a receiver who's any kind of needle mover, and Amari Cooper is just a massive upgrade.
Yeah, I think we're kind of on the same page about what we do with Cooper this week. All right, let's move on to the next one here. This one has to do with rookie quarterback that we saw last week and in a pretty interesting spot here heading into week 7.
Yeah, I don't know if this is a burning question for anybody else, but I'm super interested in whether Drake May can crush a great matchup against Jacksonville, right? And if he does it, it probably brings an end to the Doug Peterson era. They probably leave him in London. I will, like, man, May becoming a thing in fantasy is possible because there's real rushing upside here, right? And that would be much needed because, you know, some big name quarterbacks have been fine this year, but nobody's just absolutely slaying necessarily. It's a little bit complicated with May, and I'll say that the first, like, I finally gave his game a full watch, like his debut a full watch, and it's maybe not as exciting as the sort of laundered version of that game that you would get on NFL Red Zone, right? And that's how I was mostly paying attention to it on Sunday. I was just seeing highlights. I wasn't seeing the play to play. You know, he's good. He's exciting. There's some like intermediate misfires. There's some short range balls that aren't misfires exactly, but he's not putting it right on receivers. So it's probably some of the things that you would have seen as negatives in the scouting report that are still there. But man, he still made some beautiful throws. I mean, I can't say enough good things about that first touchdown pass. That looked great. And he just really kept coming all afternoon. I thought he handled pressure very well. Pretty obvious that he's going to have some nice days as a rusher too. Like, he has real rushing skill. And then this week he just gets this like flatlined version of the Jaguars. They rank dead last, both in terms of passing yards per game allowed and in passing touchdowns allowed. They've only intercepted one pass this season. Like, they're not going to, you know, rip away a bunch of takeaways. Jeez. Unless you absolutely give it to them. So it's as good a matchup as you can possibly get. And there was a lot to like in his debut.
Oh yeah, a lot to like. And this matchup against Jacksonville, you mentioned, obviously they're not a good pass defense. They also play man coverage at the third highest rate according to fantasy points data. They give up the sixth most fantasy points per dropback when they play man coverage. So not a great ratio there. In terms of the teams that play man coverage at a high rate, they're like over 40%. They're easily the worst at it. In terms of actually playing man coverage. So that makes a lot of difference for both a guy like Drake May and DeMario Douglas, who I think we'll talk about later in the show with Tara, so I don't want to dive too deep into it, but he is like a man coverage beating slot receiver, which is a little weird. But, you know, Drake May talking about it this week, he said you can't guard that guy in a phone booth, and I always come back to, like, Josh Downs was a slot receiver that you couldn't guard in a phone booth. I think Douglas is not the same player that Josh Downs is, but we've at least seen that type of chemistry and rapport, and that immediately took off in this week. And I think Douglas is clearly right now the best receiver on the Patriots roster. So he's definitely somebody, like I said, we'll talk about later on in the show with Tara. But I do just want to just stick on this game for just a second, because this is a great week of games, as we talked about at the top. This one is the London game, the 9:30 a.m. Island game, and it's probably the worst, seemingly, on the schedule.
Yeah.
But it's also endlessly fascinating just because, yes, of the Drake, yeah, May aspect, and like the Doug Peterson, you know, maybe on his last legs in Jacksonville aspect of it. Like, if the Jags lose to this Patriots team, I mean, it'll just be, the vibes probably can't get worse, but like, we'll be testing that theory, especially if Peterson sticks around. So I don't know. Do you see, if you, in your heart of hearts, Andy, if you had to sit here and guess today, is this the type of quote bad game that's just a bunch of slop, low scoring? Because even though there's you know, some potential spots for New England to get on Jacksonville's defense. They don't really do it. Jacksonville is a mess on that side of the ball. Or do you think this could turn into like a beautifully bad shootout type of game?
I think it's a beautifully bad shootout. I think it's the kind of game that can feed us like three, maybe four guys that make the pickups column the following week, right? Which it gives it some intrigue for me. You can run against New England. You can do anything you want to Jacksonville. I mean, I think the stage is set for a good game from May. You mentioned, you know, Jacksonville playing a bunch of man coverage for a proactive runner like May. That's great. Not going to surprise me if we get 50 rushing yards out of him, a couple touchdowns, some really exciting highlights. Again, I also just think that Drake, and we saw this in the preseason, I think that Drake May is going to be one of those guys where like his two or three best moments each week are just going to be like wow plays, highlight plays. And so even if they're going to be a bad team rest of season, they are definitely going to be a fun bad team now. And previously they were just headed for, you know, it was the most dull, uninteresting game watch experience that you could have, and now they're going to be really fun.
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to see who makes the pickups column coming out of week 7, and then like all of those guys will probably be in the drop section going into week 8. That's how fair. It goes. Okay, final question you have heading into this week has to do with the team coming off the bye.
Yeah, this one I think is like real life meaningful, not just fantasy meaningful. This is a big one, and it is, you know, what the receiving hierarchy looks like for Kansas City following the bye week. The Chiefs have not, obviously, I'm not breaking news, the Chiefs have not yet traded for a wide receiver, right? They should. Obviously there's two that have gone off the board who would have been wonderful fits for Kansas City. They just have a glaring need, and they were just in their bye week, so it would have been a great time to do it. There are still some dudes out there, right? We don't know, you know, does DeAndre Hopkins become available? Is Deontay Johnson available? And what can the Chiefs do to get a guy like that? But the Chiefs are also not the only team. You know, you mentioned the Steelers earlier. They're not the only good team that needs additional receiving help. So if it's just, you know, in the scenario where it's they're really going forward with just the guys that are on this current roster, I think there's a couple of relevant questions. One of them is, you know, the big game that we just saw from Juju Smith-Schuster, a player that none of us like fully trust. I get that, you know, but he did just catch 7 balls on 8 targets, 130 yards. And he was, you know, he kind of moved around all over the place. He was a real receiver. it wasn't like just one thing again and again. A good game from him. Is that representative of what the plan is for him moving forward? And is it going to be Kelce and Juju? Maybe not, because I'm still thinking back to the on-field interview that Patrick Mahomes gave immediately after the game when he was basically teed up to say a bunch of nice things about Juju, and he basically said, "Oh no, it's going to be a different guy every week." Like he totally passed on the opportunity to spit a bunch of sunshine in Juju's direction. So fine. And then I think the other possibility here is that in the bye and coming out of the bye, maybe we're going to ask more of Xavier Worthy. Right. Yeah. Maybe this is that rookie moment where, we need you to do like some like big boy receiver stuff. Now it can't just be 4 or 5 opportunities a game, you know, one of which is kind of a gimmicky handoff and, you know, 3 targets and that's it. Now, maybe we need to see a lot more from Xavier Worthy. Maybe it needs to become 9, 10 targets a game. And is he ready for that?
Man, it's so tough. I've been pretty excited about Juju. God, how am I saying that in the year 2024? But, you know, Andy Reid was asked about it, and he's like, you know, we trust him, Pat trusts him, and, like, the guy who's, you know, number two to Kelce in the offense is really important, and that was obviously, yes, like, what he said about with Juju. So, in my mind, I feel like it's kind of settled that, you know, and look, I like Rashee Rice as a player, but it says a lot to me that, you know, you just – Rashee Rice leaves and they just basically plop the current version of Juju Smith-Schuster in that role and basically get the same production. Yeah. Not maybe not the same like dangerous explosive plays, but a lot of those routes are replaceable routes, and Juju can, that's what Juju's been doing his entire career. And like, he looks pretty good right now. You know, he doesn't look like the guy who could barely move last year on the Patriots roster. Shoot, the Patriots kind of look like they need a guy like Juju Smith-Schuster right now. So I feel pretty good about Juju as a fantasy starter this week as like a wide receiver three. I don't know about you. Do you kind of feel the same way, or are you a little bit more hesitant?
Yeah, it's funny. I just did Chris Harris's podcast, and we are in very different places on, and I respect the heck out of Chris's opinions. We're in totally different places on Worthy and Juju. I've got Juju as a like in the mid 20s at receiver. I think the volume is pretty real. I would be really surprised if all of a sudden Juju just had like a 2-target game. That would kind of shock me. But Chris is kind of all in on Xavier Worthy. And I can imagine a scenario where the Chiefs are like, yeah, we need more from that guy. That's our playmaking receiver, and we just got to ask more of him. It's possible. Oftentimes that happens, like coming out of a bye week for a rookie. But I don't know that it's bankable. I mean, my assumption in this week and pretty much every week moving forward is that, I don't know, we've kind of like, Xavier Worthy is a guy who to this point has had like, the floor is nothing. The floor is he doesn't do anything for you. And the ceiling is he scores 2 touchdowns, right? So it's, you know, it's kind of difficult to express that range of outcomes in a single fantasy rank in any given week, right?
Totally.
Like, I don't, you know, because he's only going to touch the ball like 4 times. But he can make magic happen on one of those touches and it changes everything. But, you know, Chris was very in on Xavier Worthy and very out on Juju. And I think some of that is maybe like, you know, Patriots watching bias. I just don't think he has a high opinion of Juju. But I think, you know, I think volume is basically locked in for Smith-Schuster.
Yeah, I think Worthy is one of the most like interesting questions coming into this week. Mm-hmm. And you know, I bet we'll have a lot of things to say on the recap show about it. If you just look at like success rate per target metrics, like the targets to Worthy in terms of the main guys at wide receiver and tight end, they're easily the least efficient targets that have been given out in this offense so far. At the same time, if you look at like team success rate with the player on the field as a route, like on the field as a route runner, he's actually kind of the highest just because, and you know, this is interesting. Highest after Juju. And I think that just goes to show you like, man, once they got Juju in here, they really started cooking as a passing offense, which says more about the players than it does about Juju. We might throw this graphic up on the screen on the YouTube. I'll get with Colin about this, but what I mean by that is like his effect on the offense and like in terms of opening things up for other players has been tremendous for Kansas City so far. The problem is just, again, when they've tried to get him the football, it has not always worked, especially as like a real downfield receiver. How much is that just Mahomes adjusting to a rookie receiver? How much of that is, I don't think Mahomes has necessarily played his best ball this year. And I think even he would say that. I don't think that's like a hot take. Mahomes is still one of the greatest to ever do it and the best quarterback in the league. He just hasn't been up to his best standard so far this year. And how much of that is just like Xavier Worthy is not really a real deal NFL wide receiver yet. Maybe he never becomes that, but so far I kind of have my questions about that, and that's how I expected to feel about the player to start the season. So, yeah, I think there's a lot going into this. I don't know if Worthy is really someone I'm itching to start this week, but I do think he's a player that I'm super fascinated to watch him in this game coming out of the bye, because it's typically when we see rookies get unleashed, and my God, do they really, really need it. I think the Chiefs are hoping they come out of this game not having talking heads like the great Andy Barron saying like, who's available on the wide receiver market? They probably want to come out of this thinking, we got a lot out of our first round pick at wide receiver.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And again, they may. It's why it's a burning question for me and not, you know, a pound the table talking point. I'm not 100% sure that, you know, one of the, especially if it's like kind of a dusty veteran receiver that they were to trade for, I don't know that that makes any sort of difference for Kansas City. And I'm moderately optimistic about Worthy. He's always the fastest guy on the field, and that matters. You know, that sort of tilts the field in a weird way. Even as you say, even if he's not getting the ball, even if he's not getting the ball more than like 5 times a game, it matters. He is a difficult guy to account for. So I think he has value. It's just a question of whether he can like actually step into a serious role in sort of the way that Rashee Rice did as a rookie.
All right, I mentioned we're going to take a burning question from the listener before we throw it to our break here. And luckily, it has to do with the Chiefs wide receiver. So, producer Colin, let's play the message.
Hey, Matt, I got a question for you, and I hope it's not too specific to my team. I think it'll help a lot of your listeners from at least a game theory point of view. I'm in a 12-person, three-wide-receiver, salary cap, two-keeper league where you can keep keepers for the price that you drafted the year prior. I got a huge discount on Rashee Rice. I paid $12 for him. In a league where you're paying about $50, $60 for a wide receiver one. And so my situation is obviously this guy's out for the year. So he's burning a hole in my IR slot. And I'm a really active player. Like, I use those slots. I move my outs into it and I pick up guys. And I feel like I'm missing out by tying up an IR spot for another 10 weeks. On the flip side, we have a wide receiver one here that I can keep for $12 next year. My biggest fear is the litigation, because if he misses half of next year, well, he's no longer a wide receiver one. So I don't know. I just need some advice. Do you drop this guy in this situation, or do you keep him for the keeper value? Thanks.
So shout out to Bad Books, listener who sent that in. I did get a little bit of a laugh that, you know, he said, this isn't specific to my team, and then immediately, you know, rattles off like all of the interesting weirdo settings in his league.
Salary cap,
fun.
Two keeper, yeah. Blah blah blah. Yeah.
so thank you, Bad Books, for giving me and Andy an unintentional laugh on that. But I do think this, while obviously Rashee Rice is not playing this week, he's not playing for the rest of the season. I thought this fit well. One, we'll tell you what to do here, Bad Books, for sure. But I also thought this fit in with the sort of the grand scheme of Chiefs wide receivers, not this year, but also just going forward and how they might approach the position.
Yeah, I guess my answer to this, and it's a great question, and he's right, it's kind of a game theory question. Rashee Rice, regardless of whether he is suspended next season or what the length of that suspension looks like, you know, he's going to spend the bulk of his career in all likelihood playing with Patrick Mahomes and playing with like the best version of Patrick Mahomes. So Rashee Rice is in a great situation for a long time. And I wouldn't get too worked up over an unknowable situation next year, right? Like, he's got several years ahead of him in which he is in all likelihood a member of the Chiefs and working with the best quarterback in the league. So we like the outlook. The injury to him was not anything catastrophic, it turns out. It does cost him the year, but it's not something that I think we should worry about having like real echoes into the future. So I feel pretty good about him from a health standpoint. If he's, you know, if he's only $12 in your league and you get that price next year, that's really good. And in a league in which a wide receiver one might actually go for like $45 to $55, you know, $12 for half a season of Rashee Rice would be, I mean, that seems fine. I think you shouldn't drop him until it becomes absolutely dire and necessary for you to do so. I think if you feel like you can win the league this year, he's an awesome trade chip. Like, I think at $12 in that league, he's probably still a keeper for someone going into next year. So I'd keep him just for the trade ammo. And if I didn't think I could win, you know, I don't know the rest of your roster, but you probably don't have that many guys who are better bets than Rashee Rice at that cost.
No, I love the analysis from Andy there. And yeah, it's like simple cut and dry, like $12 for Rashee Rice is such a value, almost regardless of how you feel about it. The only thing I would say here is that I still remain a little unconvinced that Rashee Rice is just like a set it and forget it wide receiver one every year. And because my skepticism of that, I think that pairs well with what Andy just said there, that like, yeah, if you think he's $12 again, he's a great value, whatever. But you know, maybe other people will want to trade for that player if they're rebuilding for next year, whatever. Still, I would definitely not drop him just because of the value that he brings either to your team next year or potentially as a trade piece this year. The only thing, again, that I would just say is that we're having this conversation with the Chiefs for the second year in a row of like, my God, they need a receiver. My God, they need a receiver. And I still think we would be having this question even if Rashee Rice was available. Not now, it's obviously way more dramatic that he's not, but they, after getting what they got from Rashee Rice as a rookie, and he was basically doing the same stuff in his second season, And now they just have a guy in Juju who's basically doing the same stuff. And they still need so much more from the receiver position. Like, I think they will continue to attack that position in the offseason. So I don't know that he's just going to be 120 targets every year. Maybe I end up looking stupid for that, but that's just another piece to kind of consider here if you're you know, how to value him in the future. $12, that's one thing, whatever. But I still think Kansas City's in a pretty tough spot heading into next year at the receiver position.
Yeah, I just think again, if this manager thinks that like they can win a title if we get into November and they think they can win the fantasy league this year, man, Rashee Rice plus a first round pick, second round pick or whatever is a super attractive trade offer if we're going after a high end healthy receiver, right? If I want to add AJ Brown to my team, I want to add Amon-Ra to my team. I don't know what they're kept at. But like that might get it done, because if I'm that other manager, I can look at that and say, okay, yeah, I'll trade a $40 receiver right now for a guaranteed keeper and a good pick.
All right, let's toss to our first break. When we come back, we'll talk through Andy's three matchups that deserve your attention right after this. All right, we're back. Andy, we got three banger games to talk through here, starting with Houston at Green Bay.
Man, I want to apologize at the top for like the games that I have to leave out of my three games to watch, right? Because like we're not even going to talk about Detroit and Minnesota, which is an awesome game, but you're just starting everyone. And I thought the best way to hit the Chiefs and Niners was to just talk about the receivers on the Chiefs side. Man, such a good slate this week. Anyway, Houston and Green Bay, really fun. Man, this is a good matchup. Jordan Love, 12 touchdown passes in four games this year, shrugged off that early injury. He's been great. Last week, he completes 22 passes to 9 different receivers, which is a little bit of a nightmare fantasy-wise, right? It's the situation we kind of expected, but maybe also kind of feared in that receiving core, where like we want to invest in some of these Green Bay dudes, but man, it can be tough from week to week outside of Jaden Reed. I wouldn't mind a version of Josh Jacobs that scored a few more touchdowns, but I think he's been fine. He's been, you know, two games in a row with over 90 scrimmage yards. He's among the missed tackles leaders as always. So I think he's looked good. It would just be nice if he could make a house call or two. On the Houston side, something we talked about on, you know, Sunday night. Man, Joe Mixon looked awesome last week. Joe Mixon, like healthy Joe Mixon, is such an upgrade for that offense. He looked great. And a nice little surge last week from Tank Dell, I thought. Not that it was like, wasn't necessarily like the super explosive version of Tank Dell, but he saw volume. He caught 7 passes. He had a short touchdown. I thought you could see some of that like change of direction ability from him. I don't know if he's all the way back, but it was a really good sign that he was able to handle all that volume, play all those snaps, and actually produce for us.
Yeah, Diggs, Dell, and Mixon are like, and obviously Stroud, although he's been, you know, fine in fantasy this year, nothing crazy. I think all those guys are fantasy starters for sure. I think the interesting question really is like Texans defense versus Packers offense, because that Texans defense has been the better unit in Houston this year. I think they're 5-1, probably more so because of their defense than their offense. Now, I think the offense, when everybody's healthy, will be great, right? When they have Nico Collins and Joe Mixon both on the field together, I think that's going to be an electric unit, not really concerned about it. And I actually think it just even without Nico this week, they can really take it to a Packers defense that, frankly, I think has been mid this year. So Houston defense versus Packers offense. Yeah, how do we approach this receiver kind of hierarchy here, Andy? To me, Jaden Reed is still set it and forget it, but Wicks is probably not playing in this game. Does that bring us more interest in like Romeo Doubs, Christian Watson? What are we doing there?
Yeah, I think, you know, a fair amount of enthusiasm on the waiver wire this week from Romeo Doubs, like, you know, but that to me just felt like we're chasing touchdowns, which maybe that's fine with Green Bay, because I don't know, Jordan Love's given us 3 touchdowns a game. Maybe it's okay. But I really think Jaden Reed's the one guy that we can consider on a weekly basis. He's like a top 15, top 16 fantasy receiver. You just lock him into your lineup and you feel good about it. And they are aggressive about trying to get him the ball. Beyond that, I can't tell you that it's going to be Dobbs versus Watson this week. They've worked Bo Melton into things a little bit. You know, Tucker Kraft has had his moments. It gets really difficult beyond that, because I think beyond Reed, you're talking about a collection of players who are probably all in line for three or four catches, and they are, you know, it is a high yield situation, and there's a decent chance that they find the end zone, but I don't think any of them are going to be bankable. And I don't, for now, I, you know, until we start hitting weeks with like four or six teams on bye, I don't think I'm going to have any other Packers receiver inside necessarily my top 35.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it, too. I will say the one guy I feel pretty good about here is Tucker Kraft, the tight end. There was some kind of like complaining about Tucker Kraft after last week's, you know, kind of dud in the box score. Look, man, I think he's a top 10 tight end going forward, but let's not just, I know we're all just thirsty, desperate for something at tight end right now. But I don't necessarily know that he's going to just be that type of player for you the rest of the way, that he's a top three player at the position every week. There's still going to be some volatility. Overall, he is, he was number two in routes run last week. He was ahead of Watson and Reed, because obviously Reed was on and off the field with some injuries, but you know, behind only Dobbs. Dobbs is going to lead the team in routes run every week. That's just going to happen. Whether he gets targeted on those routes, whole different discussion. But on the season, Tucker Kraft is a 3.2 average depth of target, which that's going to, again, make the ceiling on him lower, because you're hoping for explosive plays after the catch. I think this could be one of those weeks where we see that. While the receivers are dealing with cornerbacks and man coverage on the outside, they throw a lot of blitzes at you this year. They pressure the quarterback a lot there in Houston this year, maybe more than we're, from a blitz perspective, more than we're used to with the DeMeco Ryans defense. Love's going to have to get that ball out fast, and Tucker Kraft's probably the outlet receiver on those plays.
Yeah, Tucker Kraft is also somebody who had, you know, even before Musgrave, like, picked up an injury, he was playing well ahead of him, blocking really well. I thought by the end of last season, it was pretty clear that Tucker Kraft was maybe at a different level from Musgrave. So he's very clearly the number one tight end there. And it doesn't, like, it just doesn't take that much, you know, even in this era, to finish as like a top eight fantasy tight end. That's not even much of a compliment, right? Like, top three is hard, but, you know, top 10, top eight, is that just requires like a half dozen touchdowns, which he's going to get.
All right, let's go to your next game here. Let's travel to Atlanta to talk about Seahawks at Falcons.
Yeah, this is a game that really, like, I know it's not at the same level of, like, again, Detroit, Minnesota, and the Super Bowl rematch and all that, but we have some volatile fantasy assets here, and you know, two offenses that we are really banking on in fantasy. Geno Smith has 148 pass attempts over his last three games. He leads the NFL in attempts, in completions, in passing yards. This has been, you know, we talked a fair amount in the preseason about, oh man, Ryan Grubb's offense, what is this going to look like? Are we going to see a little bit more passing volume? They literally lead the league in like any volume related passing stats. So we've gotten all of that. DK Metcalf is basically tracking to have exactly the same season he had like in his second year in the league. 1300 receiving yards. He hasn't been this useful in a while. You know, man, he's had some near misses too. Like the season that DK Metcalf is having, could, like, he's had some touchdowns called back. He had the touchdown where he was barely out of bounds a couple weeks ago. Like, he's so close to having monster games in a monster year. But Metcalf, JSN, Tyler Lockett, they're all over 40 targets already, because the volume is just relentless in that offense. And then the running games here, both on the Seattle side and the Atlanta side, like, it's a full green light for all the running backs here. Obviously, Walker and Bijan are great players, but these matchups are awesome too. Like, both of these defenses are bottom third against the run. They both allow over 140 rushing yards per week. Seattle is giving up 5 yards per carry. So just a great spot for all the running backs here. We'd mentioned Tyler Algier last week in the sort of post game recap. Algier looks really good. Like, Atlanta's got two running backs that you can start in fantasy and feel okay about. Also on the Atlanta side, I you know, shout out to Drake London, who is suddenly the most consistent receiver in the league. We never felt that way about him before, right? But now it's just it's 10 targets and a touchdown each week. He's never below 60 receiving yards. He's just been as consistent as anybody in the game, anybody at the position. 4 touchdowns over his last 5 weeks. So he is, like, the definition of a set it and forget it receiver.
Yeah, so interesting with Geno in this passing game, because I do think they want to they clearly want to run the ball more than they have so far.
They can't possibly want what they have now. This can't.
No, they don't.
This can't be by design. Yeah,
and you've seen it. You've seen it like early in games. The problem is that their defense, whether due to some injuries, they've gotten some guys back, but they still have some injuries over there, and you know, just hasn't totally clicked on that side yet. They've gotten kind of behind the eight ball a little bit, which has been fine for Kenneth Walker because he's still caught passes. But yeah, Geno leads the NFL in all those, you know, passing stats you mentioned. He's 19th in touchdowns. He's 16th in completions of 10 plus yards. So it's been a little bit of like a frustrating passing offense, even though there's so much volume. Like, none of these receivers, DK, for the season that you say he's having, like, he's wide receiver 17 on the season. He's wide receiver 27 in points per game. Now, they also have two guys there that are right around 30. JSN's wide receiver 29. Tyler Lockett's wide receiver 31. I do think that DK, like, he's left some plays on the field too. I mean, I think it was a pretty rough game for him on Thursday night. And the game before that was kind of a little bit rough too. So I hope they can spread things out a little bit more to like a JSN, to a Tyler Lockett. But overall, I think these guys are having all pretty good seasons, you know? So I just hope there's more of like an even distribution of passes there, and that they can get that run game going against a Falcons team that does struggle to defend the run. So I think this is a pretty big, like, if we come out of this with another outrageous passing number for Geno Smith, like, I mean, just give it up. Like, I guess that's what we're getting all year long, but I am at least interested to see if they can come out and like establish Ken Walker a little earlier here.
Yeah, no, it feels like the standard issue Geno Smith game right now is like 330 passing yards, one touchdown. I think he has one touchdown pass in every game so far. And, you know, probably going to throw a pick in there somewhere. He somehow ends up completing 70% of his throws. And then it's still, even though he's throwing 50 times a game, it just ends up being like a meh sort of fantasy performance. Also, I feel like I should mention that all of a sudden it feels like a lifetime ago that we were worried about Kirk Cousins, right? And what the hell were they doing in week one? And he can't be under center anymore. And now, like, we've seen multiple weeks now where he's moving really well in the pocket. It all looks good. And week one, thankfully, turned out to be a sort of a 1 week outlier.
Yeah, I will say, not to just, because I'm with you, I feel so good about the Falcons offense right now. I don't really know that there's too many like pressing questions over there, not to just keep bringing it back to the Seahawks offense, but the Falcons defense is turning into a little bit of like a run funnel defense, because they're 20th in dropback success rate, and they've been trending up throughout the course of the year, especially because they get great play from those safeties. And like Raheem Morris with those safeties, it's just like Justin Simmons and Jesse Bates. It's really a pretty good combination. But I think a lot of passes like over the middle might be the area to pick. So hopefully we see DK on some of these bigger slants and crossing routes and stuff like that he's had, and we see more JSN in the middle of the field. But I do think this is a team where they're 29th in rushing success rate, that we might see a little more Ken Walker here. So hopefully Ken Walker is able to get going in this game. Your final game, Andy, Baltimore at Tampa Bay, which is one of two Monday night games. Like, let's not forget about that Chargers Cardinals game, because that one will at least be interesting for the sickos in us. But yeah, this obviously is the headliner event on Monday.
Yeah, I feel like we talk about a Baltimore game every week, and they're actually, I don't know, to me they're kind of the less interesting team in this one, at least fantasy wise. Man, Tampa scored 114 points over their last three games. Baker Mayfield has 9 passing touchdowns in that stretch. He's got a pair of 300-yard games. He's taken over the league lead in passing touchdowns. Baker playing really well, completing over 70% of his throws. Great season in process from him. I also think on the Tampa side that like every week, Bucky Irving is responsible for at least one play that I don't know that there's 5 people in the league who can make. He is almost inarguably like at least the most, this guy's one of the most exciting running backs in the league. I'll just leave it there. But he's also stuck in what might become a 3-man rushing committee whenever Rashad White gets back. Cause I don't think they're just going to mothball Rashad White. I think whenever he comes back, it's going to be to a real role. Sean Tucker just looked great. So like, I don't know now that there's a path to Bucky Irving ever getting 20 touches in a game, but man, he looks, I mean, he just operates at a different speed than almost anybody else on the field. And it's like, he's become one of those running backs where like the defender is quite often like reacting to the first move, and he's made two other moves since then. Irving is just really, I've just found, and he's become a pet player for me. I think he's really fun to watch. And I don't know that he's going to get more than 12 touches in this game, and it's a terrible matchup. But I also think he can beat a terrible, terrible matchup because he's just been that good. It only takes one play for that guy. I guess if I like anything to call out on the Baltimore side, because we kind of know what to do with these guys. We know that we're starting Lamar. We sure know that we're starting Derrick Henry. This is an amazing season for him. You're probably playing Zay Flowers. Mark Andrews is coming off his best game of the year, but it was still only three catches, like 60 something yards and a touchdown. He also, the interception that Lamar threw hit Andrews in the hands. So I don't know that it was like a, I don't know that it was a coming out party for Mark Andrews, and he's now getting consistently outsnapped by Isaiah Likely. Like that is a thing we're going to have to deal with. I'm not sure that I would actually prefer Andrews to Likely rest of season. So that's still an ongoing conversation.
This feels like a break ties in favor of getting dudes from this game into your lineup.
Yeah.
Especially in the past game, even like if you're hurting at receiver, like I'm gonna keep saying it, Rashad Bateman, having an impact on the season, baby. 49.5 over under is the total right now, according to BetMGM. And I feel like it could go over that total. These teams are, I believe, second and fourth in passing yards allowed this year. So, this could definitely, and both these passing offenses are playing excellent football right now. So we could definitely get, number one, if we get a Rashad Bateman and Sterling Shepard touchdown in this game, I'm going to go berserk. I will be the most annoying person on the internet, but not really. I'll play it cool. I know how to keep my cool in these situations. But I think that this is just, again, a game where we're maybe not scraping that deep to the Sterling Shepard portion of the program in terms of fantasy starters. But yeah, these are pretty clear cut and dry passing games where we know where the ball goes. There's not actually a lot of ancillary characters involved in either passing offense. So definitely ratchet up your expectations for dudes in this game, because I think it's going to be a pretty fun one.
Yeah, again, like Tampa, you can't hold Tampa below 30 points lately, right? Like they had the one glitch in the Denver game. Denver, obviously, a really good defense, but they have just lit everyone up since then. And I don't know, it's not always a clinic with Baker, but the numbers have been there, and he is really enjoying himself in this offense too.
And I'm really enjoying watching it. I'm also really enjoying talking to Andy Behrens every week throughout the course of the NFL season. Appreciate you, buddy. It was a hell of a day to talk ball, and we probably could have gone a lot longer because it's a great week, but appreciate you as always, man.
Yeah, this is great. We could have talked about three more games. We could have talked about three different games in the in the games to watch segment. This is such a good week ahead.
Well, I hope everybody out there enjoys it. Andy, we will see you after the dust settles on Sunday. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Tara Roberts joins the show to share her make or break players for week 7 right after this. Joining us now, as she does every week here on the preview show, it is Tara Roberts. Tara, what's going on?
I'm doing good. I had an interesting week 6. I'm feeling a little bit like a genius because I started Tank Bigsby specifically in the Scott Fishbowl, where return yards counts. And he absolutely went off in the return game. Did I know that he was going to do that? No, did not. Will I take credit for it and say that I had a big win? Yeah, absolutely. So it was a good week for me.
I mean, hey, results over process. Who cares? All that matters is you arrived in the correct destination. It does not matter how you got there. I got to say, Tara, I'm looking over the outline of the players we are discussing here in your make or break players list, which, of course, if you're new to the show, this is not strictly like a, hey, start this guy, sit that guy. We're going to try to kind of go the underlying data here, go over some situations, maybe sort of, again, decide if these players are going to make or break your lineup here in each and every week. This is a very week 7 list. I got to tell you what, like you can tell we're deep into the season. We've got some injuries. We've got some players on bye because you got some odd players here to discuss on your list this week, Tara.
It was a funny list to make, I'm not going to lie, especially at running back, because I feel like once you get past like James Conner, you hit this brick wall where you're like, huh, this is all interesting. What exactly can we make of it? So your RB3s and your wide receiver 3s and 4s, it's all just, it's so ugly. So the flex position is very intriguing this week.
That's such a great point. Yeah, basically in weekly rankings, every time you get to the James Conner zone, you're like, okay, well, yeah, this is looking pretty dicey, and it is definitely looking pretty dicey this week. So let's waste no more time. Let's get into it here. Let's talk your make or break players, and let's start with not a running back. Let's start with a wide receiver, Falcons wideout Darnell Mooney.
Darnell Mooney, my boy Darnell Mooney. Week six production was, it was not good. It was very underwhelming. And I feel like maybe we got a little bit too hype after that week five breakout performance where he absolutely went off. And we were like, okay, this offense is just clicking on all cylinders. And maybe we got a little bit too comfortable in terms of putting him in the starting lineups. I know on Fantasy Football Live, we were talking about Darnell Mooney and who we would start him against. And it's not that it was maybe the wrong process. It was just the wrong situation here. The week six performance wasn't really alarming for me because while the Panthers are a good matchup, typically it's not multiple receivers that have been going off on them. They're also very beatable on the ground. Sometimes not a lot of pass volume there. So him not having a good game there, not something that is ringing any massive alarms. I think it just confirms that this is a guy who is a high upside wide receiver too, that is going to have low floor opportunities, that can have boom games. And you're looking at him as a low end flex that is sometimes risky, and you just got to time it right in order to get that perfect situation for him. Looking at week seven here in this matchup with the Seattle defense, it is very intriguing because we started off the season looking at the Seattle defense and thinking, okay, they've turned things around because they had kind of a shaky 2023, made some draft picks, and you're looking at it and you're like, okay, maybe we've got some development here. But over the past several weeks, they have really just been kind of reeling overall. And wide receiver twos have been being very productive against them. So Mooney does have upside here. But the issue is whether or not there's going to be enough volume, because again, they could just lean aggressively on that ground game with Bijan Robinson, obviously coming off that fantastic game. Tyler Algier can make strong contributions. And we're getting to this point where we had preseason where we were wondering, okay, are there too many mouths to feed in this offense? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of mouths to feed in this offense. And obviously Darnell Mooney is one of those guys who is occasionally going to suffer.
Man, you're so right about the Falcons, where we're at a point that they do have a lot of options here, and I also think they have multiple ways to win, and I think that's the hardest thing with trying to time the Darnell Mooney stuff right, because, yeah, you look back at week six, 28 routes, same as Drake London. He just didn't get those downfield opportunities, only a 6.8 average depth of target, and, you know, they didn't really need to do it because they could just kind of pepper Drake London underneath, and then, like I said, especially run the football. If you look at it right now, Tara, among running backs with 50 plus carries on the year, Tyler Algier ranks sixth in EPA per rush, and he is the only other running back besides David Montgomery with a success rate over 50%. He leads the NFL in rushing success rate. Like, he's not going away. So they have these games where they want to throw the ball over the yard like they did against Tampa. They can do it. They want to take the air out of the football and give it to Bijan and Tyler Algier in the backfield. They can do that too. That's what makes Darnell Mooney, I think you got it exactly right. Inherently volatile. But this week with this matchup, I look at the Seahawks on the other side, and Andy and I were talking about this earlier. This does look like a game that could go either way too, because the Falcons are definitely more of a beatable run defense than a pass defense. But both of these offenses can definitely throw it around. So in your mind, are you viewing this more as both these teams kind of stick to the ground game in this matchup, or will a pass-heavy Seahawks team force a Atlanta Falcons offense to put the ball in the air?
I feel like we might get bamboozled this week and thinking that it's going to be a situation where both of the running backs are going off of each other, off on each other because of the weakness. And we do get a situation where they're pushing more aggressive pass volume. So I lean towards this being a little bit more of a bounce back week for Darnell Mooney, but there is the reality that there's not a whole lot of in between here with him. It's either a very strong usable game or one that you're looking at sub 5 fantasy points.
51 point projected total on BetMGM right now. That is a beefy one. So yeah, it looks like the type of matchup where you might want to chase that wide receiver 3 production from Darnell Mooney. Let's move to your next player here. Kansas City Chiefs running back Kareem Hunt coming off a bye.
Kareem Hunt coming off the bye. This is now, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire potentially being activated here. Does cause a little bit of pause here, but it's not just that. It's not even about CEH. It's kind of about the fact that we are coming off of, before the bye, a game where Hunt looked like, and he is the clear RB1, you know, with compared to Carson Steele and Samaje Perine. Whether or not CEH factors into that is another story. But we were coming off of a game where he had 27 carries and 102 rushing yards and a touchdown. That level of volume is just so far beyond what we have typically seen out of the Chiefs this season, even when they had Isaiah Pacheco. So it feels like that was an outlier game for me. And my fear here with Kareem Hunt is less about the potential looming return of CEH cutting into this workload and more about the fact that maybe we're feeling a little bit too comfortable with the volume here for him. And it might look a little bit more like the week before when it was just like, it was okay. 14 carries, about 70 yards, a couple of receptions. It was all right, but it was nothing to really write home about, nothing that was really going to change your outcome in a fantasy lineup here. And there's also, looking at that previous game, it was also a very weird game, an outlier script here where the Chiefs absolutely dominated New Orleans in terms of time of possession. So it really called for just a ton of volume. You look at the matchup here with San Francisco, this is going to be a very even script where they're not going to be more inclined to push just aggressively on the ground. They're going to be more balanced overall. We could also see an uptick in usage from Samaje Perine, who was kind of underutilized in the previous game as well. So I'm worried that the volume just straight up isn't going to be here for him, regardless of what happens with inactivation of CEH.
Yeah, I feel really good about Kareem Hunt getting, you know, 14, 15 carries and being the clear lead back here. But, you know, that beefy amount of workload we saw before the bye, I'm with you that I'm a little skeptical about that. And, you know, I got a question from somebody today about like, hey, what is Kareem Hunt going to keep, you know, Isaiah Pacheco on, you know, kind of a limited amount of workload when Pacheco eventually when slash if he does come back? I think there's no shot about that. Like, I think Hunt is here to fill in and fill in admirably for while Pacheco's out. But once Pacheco's back, he's going to get back to kind of that clear cut lead back here in the running back rotation. With Hunt, it's just like I have him right now, Terry, you kind of heat check me on this. I have him right now like running back 18 on the week. That was where I opened up early. So, generally that's a guy you're trying to play. But I look at some of the players I have behind him. I could, you know, it's mostly like injury question guys like Aaron Jones, Devon Achane coming back this week, J.K. Dobbins, James Conner, like, I don't know, even Chase Brown. I feel like I actually feel a little bit more confident in Chase Brown. As I'm thinking about it right now here in the moment, do you feel like those guys that I mentioned there, provided they actually play, are clear-cut starts over a guy like a Kareem Hunt?
Yeah, I'm the exact same way. I've got Kareem Hunt at RB20 right now, and there are people that could absolutely push ahead depending on how these injury situations work out, or if we get some kind of confirmation about feeling a little bit more comfortable with one versus the other. Like a Chase Brown, that's a perfect example there of us looking at that backfield and feeling inclined to say, I feel like the logical step forward is just the continued volume for Chase Brown, but I don't know for sure if that's going to happen in Cincinnati's offense. So there's that range right there is just a whole lot of factors that as the week goes on, I could push some of them up over Hunt given the matchup situation. But yeah, he's sitting right there in the, okay, this is an RB1. I know he will get a certain level of volume. He may not go off, but it feels kind of safe-ish here just because of just a baseline of carries that I know he's going to get. So I'm with you. He's in a no man's land right there.
Safe-ish is the right way to put it. The 49ers definitely have gotten gashed on the ground a little bit by more explosive runs. I wouldn't say that Kareem Hunt at this point is offering you big explosive runs unless he gets a clear runway. I would probably play Kareem Hunt over the kind of like, hey, maybe the upside guys like the Bucky Irvings, the Tyron Tracys, you know, those Bucks running backs, things like that, just because they probably have some more competition in their backfield. Like Yeah, there's a lot of guys I'd probably rather use over Kareem Hunt this week, even if he does offer you maybe that safe floor. Let's move to another one of these running backs that it feels like we should. You actually just mentioned him at the top of the show, Tank Bigsby. Feels like we should be more excited about him given that ETN is banged up. We are just coming off unless you play in the Scott Fishbowl, you're not coming off a good Tank Bigsby performance from last week.
Yeah, exactly. Last week we were hoodwinked and bamboozled on that one. That was very unfortunate how it turned out from the actual rush yard perspective there from our little waiver wire darling Tank Bigsby as we were grabbing him, feeling like he was taking over that Jacksonville backfield. You know, the injury to Travis Etienne means that in theory, like we look at this backfield, we compare Tank Bigsby to D'Ernest Johnson. We see the work that Bigsby put in the offseason. He looks like a completely different back. I feel very comfortable saying Tank Bigsby is the clear, better back than D'Ernest Johnson. I don't feel like that one is in question here. If this was any other team, like if I put Tank Bigsby in San Francisco, I would feel so comfortable. I would be ranking him as a top 10 back. We'd be rolling. If this was his week to start, I'd feel good about it. But he's on the Jacksonville Jaguars with a team that cannot stop anyone. And that's a recipe for disaster when you're talking about a running back that Doug Peterson doesn't trust as a pass blocker, unfortunately. So we look at this situation and what happened against Chicago. Well, Chicago jumped out, took aggressive advantage of that team, and they literally just essentially abandoned the run there. They couldn't do it, and it just favored aggressively for D'Ernest Johnson in the tempo, in the way that they were having to push the ball to try and keep pace there. And they were unsuccessful with it, unfortunately. So Bigsby was outsnapped there because they were playing from behind. But when you look at this matchup with the Patriots, and we'll talk more about this because this kind of, if this was, you know, we've got the Drake May injury situation that kind of makes us potentially question things. But let's say, you know, Drake May is out there and, you know, although he is a rookie quarterback, I do feel like he can take advantage, even his second start, of the secondary here. So we look at them and the potential for even New England to jump out and make this a less of a back and forth and more of a the final nail in the coffin on Doug Peterson. It would again be another situation where Tank Bigsby would just be put on the back burner because they're chasing points. So if Jacksonville can keep this game close, and maybe that's the only positive here, because it's no surprise that they weren't able to keep pace and keep things up against Chicago's defense. They are absolutely for real. New England's defense is dealing with a lot of injuries. They're not the same defense that we've had before. They're very vulnerable. So there's a scenario where the Jags can keep it close. And if they can keep it close enough, Tank Bigsby can have RB1 upside. But it's how much can we trust the Jags to be able to make this a competitive game with New England? I didn't think we'd be saying that at the beginning of the season, but here we are trying to figure out what the actual script of this game is going to be, because he's so game script dependent. And I hate that for him because I think he's the better back, but it takes time, unfortunately, for you to earn that trust as a pass blocking running back when you're young.
This is how just bad things are in Jacksonville right now, that they're a 5.5 point, you know, home favorite there in London. And for the podcast folks, I put home in quotes. Obviously they're in friggin' London. They're a home favorite, 5.5 points. They're facing a team that is 1-5 with a rookie quarterback, and we are still like, oh, can we trust the early down banger back, you know, when that's the perfect setup for a guy like Tank Bigsby? But we're so skeptical of what we've seen from the Jaguars so far that we're like, do we trust that 5.5 point favorite? Do we trust the fact that they can beat a team that, again, is 1-5 and with a rookie quarterback? And it's all justified, right? It's all justified, the fact that we are skeptical of this entire Jacksonville Jaguars operation. So I don't know, Tara. Like we just talked about Kareem Hunt, and we just talked about all of those guys kind of in that sort of bucket of players. Do you feel better about Tank Bigsby just given some of the, I guess I'll say, you know, objective facts around it, which is just the matchup and thing, or like the game script and things like that, projected at least by BetMGM and Vegas and stuff like that? You feel better about a guy like Tank Bigsby or a guy like Kareem Hunt and some of the players we kind of discussed in that section?
I still feel better about Kareem Hunt and the majority of those players as well. Tank Bigsby, he's further back than I would like him to be. And again, injury things might push him up a tiny bit there. But the problem is that while Vegas is saying that this should be a game that favors Jacksonville, I just can't buy it here. I'm having a tough time with it. I got to be talked into believing into this Jacksonville offense. And Doug Peterson hasn't talked me into it, so I don't know who can.
Well, it ain't going to be me, I'll tell you that. So, I feel like Bigsby is definitely on that low-end RB2, high-end RB3 flex radar. Just kind of depends on your options. But he is a very risky start. So he's perfect for kind of the make-or-break section here. Because, I could see the Jags controlling this game just because theoretically they're the more talented football team. But they're just an outright dumpster fire right now. So could also see him scripted out of that one. Next player on your list is Vikings running back Ty Chandler.
Ty Chandler, obviously, is a little bit different of a situation because while we've seen a strong game out of Kareem Hunt, we've seen a strong game out of Tank Bigsby, we've yet to see that out of Ty Chandler. He should be leading the backfield here if Aaron Jones is unable to play. And normally, we're talking about a lead back, top-tier offense. Not a lot of competition there. We do have Cam Akers coming in here. He could play immediately and contribute because he's very familiar with the Vikings offense. He was just there last year. But supposedly, straight from Kevin O'Connell, this is not a question here. They feel comfortable with Ty Chandler. So I do trust that he's going to be the lead back here. It's just a matter of whether or not I trust him to be able to have, a certain level of production here in this matchup. That's what worries me here. Now, given the level of injuries that we have, we've talked about this. He's right in that range where you're looking at, again, just outside the top 20, things start to get very ugly. And you're looking at Ty Chandler and you're like, well, I mean, he is the lead back. Minnesota is a great offense. They're going to score points. There's going to be goal line opportunities. This is not going to be a destitute situation where he gets phased and a game script doesn't favor him. So we don't have those factors that we have to worry about with Tank Bigsby. But at the same time, we're looking at a tough defensive matchup. Even with the absence of Aiden Hutchinson, Detroit's defense is still extremely strong, and a running back that really hasn't proven thus far this year that he can make anything out of the volume that he gets. So again, this is another one here where there's opportunity and we could maybe lean into it, but it feels very uncomfortable.
Aiden Hutchinson is the type of defensive player that, like, when you remove him, I do think it forces you to kind of change the complexion of, like, what you would think of a defensive unit. So that does have me kind of wanting to pause here with anything I say about the Lions defense. And I think you feel the same way. The thing is, though, if you look at the way the line, and this is actually still a negative for Ty Chandler, like, again, imagining that the Lions defense is sort of similar ish to what we've seen with Aiden Hutchinson on the field. They are 10th in rushing, 11th in rushing success rate allowed, 10th in EPA per rush allowed. Like, they're a really good run defense, and they're the exact type of the opposite type of defense than what we saw in that week three game where the Niners faced the Vikings, where Ty Chandler did have 10 carries for over 80 yards when Aaron Jones was a little banged up. Like I mentioned, the 49ers defense can be gashed by these, like, explosive runs, not necessarily just, like, sustaining momentum runs. That's what Detroit does well. They're such a good tackling unit. They're such a disciplined defense overall up front that they can slow down those explosive ground games. So that's, like, another variable, I think, in against Ty Chandler going into this one. So I don't really know what to make of Chandler if he ends up starting for Aaron Jones. I'm with you that normally, a guy like Jones misses, I'm interested immediately in the backup because of this is a good offense. And generally, I think Chandler's an explosive player. So I don't want to overreact to some of the performances we've seen since we at least did get that 10 carry 80 yard game. But I very much feel on the fence about this one as well.
Yeah, and I hate that too, because he's someone, I mean, quite frankly, he's someone that throughout the offseason, I was looking at and thinking maybe Minnesota, I mean, they've got a lot of things that they need to address. Maybe they spend their money elsewhere and they say, we're going to roll with Ty Chandler. So I thought he had the talent to potentially lead this backfield regardless before free agency. So it's very, very intriguing sitting here because I'm with you. I don't think he's a bad running back. But we just haven't seen that level of consistency for him. But it's such a good offense, bad defensive matchup, such a juxtaposition of stuff where we've got multiple factors that we have to consider here for him.
Let's move to your final players here, because it's a plural. A couple of Patriots players that you have as the make or break option this week. And you mentioned it earlier. It's Drake May and his top receiver, DeMario Douglas.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Prior to the news that he got an MRI on his knee, and again, we'll need to monitor that situation. This was my lead of the make or break column for this week, because Drake May, I mean, heading into this, I mean, and, you know, even taking it back to draft season, I feel like we got the confirmation here where there was a lot of, push up for J.J. McCarthy and whatnot. And he's wonderful. But I feel like the NFL told us, and we got that confirmation there, that the gap between 1, 2, and 3 compared to 4, 5 was pretty significant in the eyes of those guys that were drafting in the top 15 here. It was May that was the last kind of buck stop here of what we're really feeling comfortable trying to trade up to get. And so him coming in and immediately being able to take this poor, destitute New England offense to another level is exactly what we would expect out of a guy who was one of the confident, clear top three picks of the NFL draft here. And it was, you know, he's a rookie. Turnovers are going to happen. He had two interceptions, a fumble. So, you know, that's maybe the thing that kind of we talked about that Jacksonville defense here. And they could potentially get some turnovers to make this a little bit more of an even game here. But I fully expect him to come in and be able to take advantage of this New England Jacksonville Jaguars defense from a volume perspective. The fact that he was able to throw three touchdowns on what is, you know, a fairly formidable defense in Houston in his first start, very encouraging here. He's got the added upside on the ground as well. People don't, you know, they underestimate his mobility there. He can move. He can give us a little rushing upside there. So putting him in this second career start against this layup defense here, I feel so inclined to lean into him as a streaming option, feeling more comfortable with him. And the way that he immediately boost Demario Douglas here. Like I love Jalen Polk and the potential for him in the future here, but it's very clear at this point. And even before with Jacoby Brissett, it was very clear that Demario is the wide receiver one of this offense here. He's one that's been getting volume. He just haven't been able to do anything with the volume because unfortunately Jacoby Brissett just isn't supplying very usable volume for him. The targets were there, but unable to make anything of them. And that goes back to last year in his rookie year as well. Drake May coming in there and immediately giving this man a career game in that first start is incredible. And I hate to set the expectations so high, but he is a volume receiver. And I feel like Drake May can give that to him and give him a little bit of touchdown upside as well. I've pushed him up in the rankings. I feel like he's kind of in that borderline, like to flex in this. If it's we've got Drake May who's healthy and playing here, I feel fairly comfortable with him as a flex option, oddly enough, just because of the volume and the massive upgrade at quarterback and the combination of the bad defense here. So oddly enough, injury issue in a perfect world doesn't exist. This is the core piece right here that I, crazy enough, feel most comfortable in this make or break kind of list here.
I mean, Terry, you're getting the people jacked up about, about the Patriots. it sounded...
How am I doing that?
I don't know, but you're doing a great job. I'll tell you that. I think I saw a report today that Drake May was walking through, you know, the locker room normally, no walking boot, none of that stuff. So it seems like he's going to be okay. I think we can safely assume he'll be the one out there in week number 7 here. So you said you're pushing Demario Douglas up the rankings, and I'm with you. I think he is a like wide receiver 3 type starter.
Mm-hmm.
Give me like kind of a bucket range of where you're placing him ranking wise. And are there any like bigger name players, you know, that people are like, oh, this is a must start, where you're like, actually, I think Demario Douglas projects a little bit better than this guy.
You know, I'll give you one that I have right above Demario Douglas, because I've got him in that wide receiver 3 range. I'm probably a little bit higher than, I haven't looked, but I might be a little bit higher than everyone else. You know, leaning into a tiny bit here. So he's a high end wide receiver 3 for me. I feel like I have him right behind a guy like Jordan Addison, and that feels weird. Yeah, it feels weird, but I think that kind of Pittman Addison range, those are the guys that I have right above him where I like those players. They obviously are, you know, have the edge in terms of talent, right? I don't feel like that one's a question there. In perfect situations, they have the higher upside. but I lean towards feeling slightly comfortable with continuing to push them, all things considered, because Demario Douglas, this matchup is the key here. We've got bad matchup for Jordan Addison. Not fantastic matchup for Michael Pittman, but, you know, quarterback situation with Anthony Richardson, adding a little bit of ambiguity. So those are kind of guys right there, kind of the bigger names. I've also seen kind of in the live shows I've been doing that, oddly enough, guys like Juju Smith-Schuster are being pushed up a lot as well, which is fine, right? Because it's Kansas City and volume here. But I feel like he's sitting in that range with the Juju's and the Jacoby Myers and the aforementioned Darnell Mooney's. And I can push him easily over those guys. That's the guys that I feel more comfortable with putting him above. And the ones that he's right below are that kind of Pittman and Addison area.
I love it. Hey, listen, if you like Tara's view of Demario Douglas, and I, you know, talked about it a little bit earlier on the show, I like where Demario is at right now. If you like it, he's 34% rostered still in Yahoo leagues. Like, that definitely, I think that number needs to come up here. As long as Drake May is out there, he's playing well, and this is a good matchup for him. I do think he is close to like a clear-cut fantasy wide receiver three. So that's great stuff, Tara. These are perfect, like I said, make or break players. They're some of the more difficult ones to rank, at least when I've been putting together my week 7 rankings. So I think this is perfect for the people. And with that, let's toss it to our keys to winning, presented by Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. And for week 7, our keys to winning, as it always is picking the guys that you need that are going to make the difference in your flex spot. We want you, we need you to get the win this week. All the people out there listening to this show, we love you so much. We care so much for your teams. We need you to get over the hump here in week 7. This is the time to compete. This is the time to lock in. So Tara, with all that pressure applied, give me one player that fantasy managers could potentially be debating putting in that final starting flex spot that you say is worth the shot this week.
So I dragged Jacksonville earlier, and rightfully so. But the one bright spot of that offense that I trust and want to lean into is Brian Thomas Jr. Coming off of last week's underwhelming performance, maybe people are feeling like, oh, I don't know if I can trust him. Maybe he's a little bit more risky than I thought. And that was after two top 10 finishes in half PPR, where Thomas had absolutely been gelling, looked like it was really ascending into that wide receiver one role here. And then everything kind of went downhill last week with just 3 receptions on 6 targets for 27 yards. And it was Gabe Davis that had the big Gabe Davis day. But again, guys, that was against Chicago. Please don't let that pull you off of Brian Thomas. And Gabe Davis having that go-off game was not really surprising, because the player that was supposed to theoretically be covering Gabe Davis was out. So it all kind of made sense here. But this week here is a Brian Thomas week. Again, we talked about this. The Jags played New England. New England's defense is dealing with injuries. This is just not the difficult matchup of the past that it has been with that previously vaunted New England defense. With a couple of exceptions here, Patriots have had wide receivers put up relatively strong numbers against them. Prior to the dud week again here from Brian Thomas, he was wide receiver 9 in average points per game in half PPR, right behind Chris Godwin, of all people, who we all know is having just the most fantastic year ever. So don't let one bad week pull you off of him. He has legitimate wide receiver 1 upside, and he's a very solid wide receiver 2 that can win your week here.
Yeah, I think people got a little over their skis with Brian Thomas, you know, kind of crowning him as like a top 12 receiver rest of way after his hot start, his thumping of the Colts. But there's going to be some volatility, but I love your reasoning to lean into that volatility this week. I think this is the type of week that you start Brian Thomas. My pick here for keys to winning is Colts wide receiver Josh Downs. And look, I know what people out there are saying. Harmon, Joe Flacco is not going to be starting anymore. Anthony Richardson is going to be under center probably. I don't care. I don't care which Colts wideout. I don't care which Colts quarterback is under center. I'm still starting Josh Downs. Josh Downs has been targeted on an outrageous 35% of his routes in the last 3 games. And again, I know a lot of that was with Joe Flacco under center. But let's remember that we haven't really seen Anthony Richardson line up. We've not seen his games overlap with a healthy and fully integrated Josh Downs, because this is a guy that was coming off a preseason high ankle sprain. Honestly, it's been crazy that he's been so good and so productive coming off that high ankle sprain. So now that I think Richardson will be back in the mix, I think Josh Downs is, like I said, he might be the best receiver on this roster. I'm a Michael Pittman fan, and there's some intrigue in Adonai Mitchell, and Alec Pierce is obviously doing the Alec Pierce stuff deep down the field. I think Downs is their best separator. He is their layup target. And against the Miami Dolphins defense, that throws a lot at you up front and can definitely mix things up on the back end in terms of avoiding deep passes going over their head, I think Josh Downs is going to get a lot of targets underneath. So again, despite the fact that we've got a quarterback change here, Downs, I think, is still a low-end wide receiver too. Somebody you're probably still starting in that last flex spot. So don't worry about Anthony Richardson. Be confident in Josh Downs. Tara Roberts, you said it all. You've done it all. You brought some, like I said, very interesting players to the mix here. But I'm glad you ended it on a high note with Brian Thomas Jr.
There we go. That too. And I'm glad you also mentioned Josh Downs too, because I will lean into an Indianapolis receiver anytime I can.
Hey, maybe it's all just cope little bit of dose of hopium for me there on the Josh Downs stuff, but really do love the player, and I'm very much looking forward to seeing what he can do with Anthony Richardson when those two guys are out there together. That is going to do it for us today. Thanks again to Toyota, the official automotive partner of the NFL. Make sure you're watching Fantasy Football Live on Sunday morning, where both Tara and I will be joined by Jason Fitz and Andy Behrens to kind of try to guide you through everything you need to know Sunday morning, week 7. The next time you listen to this podcast, week 7 is going to be in the books. At least Sunday will be in the books. And Andy Behrens and I will be here to break it all down for you. Until then, we're out.